just like, think it comes down to a really simple sentence that I've just learned is, life is so overcomplicated. It's like, do stuff you like with people you like and do more of that. And so I just try to follow that.
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
I'm super excited to be talking to my guests here today. I'm in Las Vegas just for this, so this is super important to me. I'm talking to Layla Hormozi, but in case you don't know who she is, I'm gonna have her introduce herself. Layla, can you introduce yourself to the people and tell them a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Gosh, I always get so awkward with these things. I'm like, oh, what do I say? No, I'm the CEO of acquisition.com currently. I grew up in Michigan, moved to California when I was about 20, and then pursued a career in fitness. I got into fitness and quickly realized that I needed to learn marketing and sales. And so I pursued learning those things. And then randomly on Bumble, met my now husband, who I started a business with called Gym Launch. And we built and sold that business along with two others, Prestige Labs and Allen. And then after we built and sold those businesses, started acquisition.com. Now, those are all the things that I've done and business related. I think underneath all of that, like, who I am more so is like weird, I'd say. I'm a little weird, quirky. I love people. And like my favorite part and why I love business so much is just because I love creating an environment where people really love to work. I love helping other people build that in their businesses. And I like creating a win-win for the customers, for the employees, for the business. And so that's always been what I've really liked doing. Like I think ever since I was young, I've just been passionate about helping people. And I think what a lot of us aspire to, which I also do, is just being that person for my younger self that I never had.
There's this thing that I'm sure a lot of people who are watching or listening are going to say to themselves, well, I was in fitness, but I'm not running a multi-million dollar company. That seems like, help me connect those dots here. So you're into fitness, you moved to LA. I think I read that you became the top selling salesperson. Like, how are those two skill sets related? And how does one become so good at sales when that isn't like necessarily the training or the background that you have?
Honestly, dude, I think I learned by necessity. Because I got out to, it was Orange County, and I went and I had a degree in exercise science. And so I'm like, oh, I think I can get a job as a personal trainer anywhere, right? Which was true. I applied at like six gyms. I got offered at all six, but I had a couple $1,000 in my bank account. My rent was $1,000 a month, and I, you know, had gas, food, all that. And so I was like, I need to make money. And I had had jobs before, but never like commission-based, anything like that. And the thing about the job that you could make the money fastest at was that you had to sell. And I had always been so averse to anything like sales. I just thought, oh, salespeople are gross. And I very quickly understood that like every business sells, right? It just sells in different ways. And if I wanted to actually do what I set out to do, which was the main thing for me, was I really just really wanted to help people lose weight. I actually had been about 100 pounds overweight and I had lost it all and then started doing bikini competitions. And so I wanted to help other people do the same. And I realized that like, just because I was good at something didn't mean that people were just going to throw themselves at me and want what I had to offer. And so I moved out there, got that job. And I remember there were 20 of us that they hired at the same time. And I want to say the end of month one, there were three of us left. And it was because it was hard. You know, I think a lot of people, there's a lot of preconceived notions about what sales is, for one. And I think that deters people from even trying to get good at it. And then the second piece to it is that I think it requires a very large, like a high capacity to receive rejection. And I think that I just have the capacity for that. And I developed that earlier in life. And so that allowed me to be okay with failing so much so quick. And then also saying, you know what, like this doesn't mean I'm a failure, but it means that I need to work and I need to get better at what I'm doing. I need to acquire skills. And so I just used that as the opportunity of like, I don't want to have to move back home because I couldn't make money and I couldn't afford my rent. Like, I want to prove to myself that I can do this. I don't need anybody. I don't need my parents. I don't need another person to depend on. You know, I can make my own money. And so I remember reading probably like four different books on sales. And the common thread that I felt after reading all of them was, I should be really good at sales because I actually believe in what I want them to buy. And I'm trying to learn sales not to make money, I mean, there's, this is a consequence of it, but like, because I actually want to help people lose weight and I actually want their lives to change. And it's like, this is just something that has to occur in the in-between for me to get there. And so I think it was realizing that, and realizing that behind all of the like tactics of sales is, if you really realize, like, if you pull back the curtain, everyone's trying to manufacture conviction. And I had conviction. So why do I need to use any tactics? And so instead, what I realized, I just shared my story with everybody. I was like, this is why I came out here. This is why I literally moved as a 21-year-old female alone to California, packed up my car, almost no money, because this is what I want to do for people. And I realized that in sharing that with people, that was what got people to be like, I'm on board. And they were really bought in. So they were more likely to be successful because they were like, that's really cool that you actually did that yourself. You know, I think for a lot of people, you know, I mean, obviously you can make a lot of money in sales, but I would just, I got really good at sales, quote unquote, because it was something that I wanted to sell. I really believed in it and I knew that I was going to be able to help people. I had the utmost conviction in it. And I think the same goes for today. It's like, I'm sure I'm good at sales, but like, it's because I would never sell something that was you know?
Mm-hmm. I want to pull on that thread a little bit. So you have a pretty radical transformation story yourself. This is what you studied. So you believe in the product because it's transformed your life. So your passion carries through in the way that you communicate. And I'm thinking about all our audience who are these introverts, these creative types. Maybe they work in branding, marketing. I think they believe what they're doing is good too, but they don't seem to be able to transfer that same passion. And a friend of mine, a professor from Art Center, he said, sales is, I have a passion and I just want to share that passion with you. So if you can peer into the weird, awkward world of creatives and designers, what are they missing here that they can't become a Layla and be able to like just kick ass like that? What do you think it is?
You know, what's interesting is that you say that really resonates with me because growing up, I identified as like being an introvert. You know, I felt like when I was in rooms of people, I wanted to leave or could be there for a little bit of time and then wanted to go home. And over time, I realized that I think many people can be both introverts and extroverts. It depends on the context and the circumstance. You know, because I'm sure that there's people that claim that they're introverts, but in certain rooms, they would like to stay and they like being around a lot of people, depending on who those people are. And so as I've gotten older, I think I've tried to relinquish myself from any label. You know, even my own team, you know, they'll call themselves creatives and they know that I'm like, am I not a creative? Cause I make content. You know what I mean? But I don't ever want to put myself in that box. And so I would say the first thing is like, I think many of us could label ourselves as something within a context of a situation, but I don't think that we're never equal to a feeling or equal to a label. Like I am not creative. Like you can never be that. You can never be an emotion either. You can't be anxiety. You can't be anything. You can only be who you are. And so I think that by taking on those labels of like, well, I'm an introvert, so this is going to be tough for me. How am I going to sell? Well, I'm a creative, so how am I? You are you. You can be a creative and sell. You can be an introvert and sell. You can be an introvert and be passionate and loud at times. And I just found that to serve me so much more because what happens when you label yourself is that it's almost the placebo effect, which is you take on this label and you might have a few attributes that within certain situations, you label yourself as this thing, but then it generalizes to the rest of your life. And you start to start to show up as that label within all facets of life. And then you actually start to take on all the rest of the attributes of that label as well. There's a lot of studies on this. And so I would just say that within the question you asked itself, that's where people are ultimately starting from. I would say like, it's just not true. Like even the statement, like I am something, like, no, you are not. Like you are not any of, you cannot be, it's not physically possible. And so I think starting from a place of like, when I'm in these certain situations, I tend to act in a way that exhibits these behaviors. And I think just even the language in that's in itself changes how you see yourself. For me, when I am in large rooms with lots of people who are very loud, I tend to want to leave, right? When I am in a large room full of people who are having quality conversations and maybe like sitting and having coffee, like I don't feel the need to get out and leave. And so I think that the first place is just starting with how we speak of those situations. Because for me, I had a lot of, I would say, really unhelpful assumptions about myself going into that situation that made it hard at first to realize that it's not or it's and. It's not that I have to be an introvert or an extrovert. I can be both. It's not that I have to sell or not sell. I can do both. It's not that I have to be good at one thing or the other. I can do both. And I don't know. I'm just more of a fan of and. It's like, I can be creative and sell my shit, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like what you're talking about is a mindset issue or a challenge that once you reframe how you define yourself, then you can open yourself up to more opportunities.
Yeah. I okay. mean, because
I like that.
I think the best thing I ever did for myself was say that I'm never going to label myself. I'm never going to subscribe to the, even now, people are like, well, how does it feel to be a female? I don't care. I don't subscribe to any labels of anything because I might want to change tomorrow because it serves me and it serves my life and my happiness. And so, you know, that's what's worked for me. It's not what works for everybody. I don't see as many benefits to labels as I do cons. I'll put it that way.
Okay. The question I have for you then is, I think you said you were in your early 20s. You moved to LA from Michigan, right? Where did this mindset develop? Where did this philosophy come from? Because a lot of people have labels that were put on them from childhood that they can't seem to escape. It doesn't really matter how old you are. They just can't escape this box that they put themselves in or someone's put them in. I mean, I hate to ask it this way, but like, people always assume, were you always this way? Were you born this way? Or did you have a moment in your life when, hey, I don't want that anymore. I'm going to change today.
You know, I think a defining moment for me was my parents divorced when I was like, I don't know, I was 8 or 9. And my mother fell into, you know, alcohol and drugs. And I lived with her and she developed this habit and it kind of snowballed. Like it's at first, she's drinking, she's going out, she's getting drunk. So then it's like she doesn't come home till 3, 4 a.m. Then it's all of a sudden like she's gone for a day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. And I was young and I had been raised mostly by my mother. And so I didn't want to tell my father because it almost felt like I didn't even know him well enough. Now he has a girlfriend who has kids that they're in the house. And I was like, I want to go there. And so I lived with my mom while she was going through whatever she was going through. And I remember there was a night, and at this point, I'll give you some context. I was a very, very shy kid, like made fun of, would sit alone at lunch, like overweight. I had buck teeth, like not cute. And I just remember like intense anxiety going to school every day because I was constantly made fun of. I didn't feel like I fit in, you know, physical appearance, all those things. And I remember my mother didn't come home for a couple of days and I was calling her and I'd probably called her like 18 times. And I was just worried she was dead. I was just like, I just wanted to pick up the phone so she can just say that she's alive. I don't even care if you don't come home. Just like, let me know that you're alive. So I don't need to call the police. And I remember just all of a sudden this voice in my head and it was like, stop calling. And I was like, and then I realized, I was like, there's no point. You're not going to change what's happening here. And I was like, and then the one thought that came through my head, and I just remember crystal clear, I was sitting in the guest bedroom with like this cord phone. I was staring out the window. It was like pitch black, 3 a.m. And I was like, you've got to just make it worth it. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, it's been so for the last few years. Like every day, insane anxiety, like feeling all sorts of feelings. I don't think, you know, it's not fun when you're a kid and you're alone. And I just made this promise myself. I was like, I want to be a better woman for my future kids and the future generation than this woman has been to me. And I thought about in that moment everything that she represented to me: victim, dependent on others, weak, you know, succumbing to vices. And I was like, I just want to be the opposite. And in that moment, and I was so young, but I remember so clearly, I was like, my motivation changed. I was like, you know what? I'm going to start, like, as a young kid, I think at that point, you know, because they got divorced, I was 8 or 9. I think by this point, I was probably 11 or 12. I had this new vision of what I wanted to be and how I wanted to show up. And that was how I looked at everything. And I was like, I can't be this shy, scared, fragile girl if I want that to be my life. And I think about that a lot because, you know, even the other day, my dad was saying, he was like, you know, I was talking to your sister about your mom and I just like have these insane feelings of guilt that you ever went through what you went through and that I didn't know. And I was like, honestly, I'm so grateful for it because I probably would have still been that type of person. And I think that was probably the most pivotal moment I can remember. Why I had that thought, I have no idea. But I just remember so clearly having it. And I think that it's stuck with me since then. I mean, it's been like 20 years, but it served me.
You're 12 years old. Your mom doesn't come home for days. It's hard for me to process what a young teenager, you're not even a teenager at that point, the emotions you must be feeling at that point. I don't know if it's okay, but I'm going to ask you. I mean, did you cry? Did you feel abandoned, lonely? Like, why has this happened? Why is this my life? Because I can't even imagine. I have two boys that when we leave them alone, like they're 17, it's like, oh my God, are you guys going to be all right? Like, do you even know how to put yourself together in the morning? And here you are, you go to school, your mom's not around. Help me understand that. It's like, how does that impact you as a child?
I think people are so much more resourceful than you think. I had friends and I would go stay at their houses. Okay. And I would go, you know, get food from their house and bring it home. I would entertain myself with playing with kids in the neighborhood. I think in the beginning, it was incredibly hard when it first started happening, and it was out of the norm. It was unexpected. That was the hardest, because once it became a pattern, you just expect it to happen and it becomes your life. When it wasn't and it was unexpected, I think that was when it was the hardest for me. And it was the way I can only describe it is like when you have that feeling of anxiety, like before you step on stage, I just had that all the time because I felt like I was living with somebody who's very unpredictable. And so I was never sure when the next shoe was going to drop. And then once I saw over a long enough time what her new patterns were, then it was just, how am I going to take care of myself? I mean, that is where I think so much of actually my leadership has come from, is that, you know, I learned to dress myself, take care of the house. She ended up bringing home 13 animals and then not taking care of them. And so I took care of all the animals, did the dishes, made sure we didn't have rotten food in the house, like started taking care of things, you know, noticing we had past due bills, like forging her signature, doing all that stuff as a young kid, because it's funny, like we treat a lot of kids like they're not capable of all these things, but like so many of the things that I did were things that some adults can't even do, you know, but by necessity, I just started doing them. I think that you just adapt. And I mean, after that, it was really interesting because then when I had to go and back and live with my dad after years later and the police found out it was a whole thing, that was really hard to like have basically been taking care of yourself and then go into a household where people start to try and take care of you. That was incredibly uncomfortable. But I think a lot of kids are more capable than their parents think they are. And I think, you know, I don't really know. I've read a lot of books on like nature and nurture. I have no idea what goes into it. I don't know why, but I think I made the best of it at the end. You know, I think at the same time, like there's a lot of stuff I dealt with later because, you know, it causes some adverse behaviors, like just being angry. But I figured that out later on. So yeah, that was fun.
I have this theory, and I'm really into comic books and graphic novels and fiction. And I think the difference that that defines a hero and a villain is how they deal with adversity and trauma, right? So in this case, someone else could have shut down, could have gone down their own dark tunnel and repeated the same behaviors versus emerge more reliant, empowered, and made promises to her young self that I'm never going to be this kind of person. I'm going to be the antithesis to this. I'm curious, what is your relationship with your mom today?
We don't speak. Okay. I've tried for a long time. I didn't speak to her for a few years, and it's really interesting, you know, because a lot of people, they're like, oh, do you want to talk? I'm totally fine talking. Because I think a lot of people carry a lot of guilt for not speaking to their parents. But if every time you see your parent, there's an incredibly punishing event and they make your life worse, would I let somebody else treat me that way? If for the last 15 years that I've tried to have a relationship with her, it has been a series of punishing events, whether it be emotionally punishing, physically punishing, you know, mentally punishing. And so I just decided, I was like, you know, just because you were great for a period of time in my life, it doesn't work for me anymore. And just because I'm your daughter doesn't mean I need to stay in a relationship out of obligation. Because I have higher standards for how my friends treat me and how strangers treat me. Like, I wouldn't even let a stranger treat me that way. And I'm not talking about like being rude or something like that. Like, it goes far beyond that. So I don't have a relationship. I probably would take spurts of like a couple years try. And the last time was, I want to say 4.5 years ago. And then I let her know that I was no longer going to attempt to try because I'd tried so many times and I'd given so many chances. And I said, I've just realized by this point, it's been 12 years and nothing's changing. And, you know, she's tried to reach out, but it's just not something that, I mean, it sounds like people think that I've got like some deep, I have nothing. I'm just like, what's the benefit? I have so many amazing people in my life who bring me so much joy. I have so much in my life that I love doing. So many people that are so great. Like, and you just make everything worse. So why would I want a relationship with you? So I just choose not to.
My wife was raised by a mom who's too young to have her mom hat on. So she's gone through a lot of her life raising herself and her sisters, and
yeah,
has similar things. It's a little bit different, but there's this thing. They have a great relationship. She's fine, but I think there's something deep inside of her that is very sensitive to the feeling of not being loved. So whenever I show anything where I'm not pleased with something, it's way more than what that is, because it's like a sign that I don't love her. And of course, I do love her. Do you have all the love that you need in your life?
I think I have a lot of love.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that like my whole life I have, but I feel like right now is probably the happiest I've ever been. Mm. Just like, I think it comes down to a really simple sentence that I've just learned is, life is so overcomplicated. It's like, do stuff you like with people you like and do more of that. And so I just try to follow that. It's like, even when it comes to work, because I think that if you like what you're doing, you like the people you're doing it with, there's nothing more enjoyable for me. And so I do feel that way. And I think I'm lucky because I have friends that have become like family, and then a really strong father, that I think, you know, my father and I became super close through that experience, because after everything became exposed to him, and I moved in with him, you know, I don't know if that would have happened. I don't know if I ever would have gotten that close to him. And still, we're very close. We talk every day. He now works in my company. I don't know if that would have happened if everything with my mom hadn't happened. And my dad is like one of the most genuinely amazing people that I know, like that I truly have ever met in my life. And it's not because he's my dad. It's just because of who he is. And so I feel really lucky. I think when I was young, I had a lot of feelings of envy towards people who had a strong mother. That was tough for me. Like watching people go shopping with their mom and watching them, you know, it'd be movie night and the mom comes down, she's talking with us about like guys and all that. And like, it's like stuff like that when you're a teenager and you're growing up and becoming a woman and not having a woman to talk to, that was hard. But as I've gotten older, I think I've been resourceful enough to find people that have been able to supplement in that way. And I think that I miss the love that the mother I had before she turned to alcohol was, but I don't miss what I got after. And I'll be honest, dude, like I don't spend any time thinking about it, because I'm like, it might be true that I'm missing a mother's love, but is it useful to think about? Does it benefit my life? Does it make me feel better or worse? And if it doesn't make me feel better and there's nothing I can do about it, I don't know. I'm so blessed compared, like I grew up here in America, you know, like because my dad came from Iran. It's like, I genuinely am like, there's just so much that could be so worse. I have nothing to complain about. Guys, I just want to take a quick break to thank all of you for listening to the show so far. If you enjoy what you're listening to, I would be so grateful if you would just consider leaving me a review or even sharing it with somebody who you think would love to hear the kind of content. As you can see, I don't run ads on here, so the only way that this show grows is if we can continue to make awesome content, and the only way I can do that is through you liking, subscribing, and rating. All right, let's get back to it.
It's really wild for me to hear you say this and describe your thought process, because this is how I think, and I describe it to people, and they're like, you alien, nobody thinks like that. I'm like, no, I know somebody else who thinks just like that. Where,
that's cool.
Like, here's the example I would give to people. Like, I don't know for a fact that we have free will. I don't. We could just all be like cause and effect machines that we just don't understand.
I actually agree with you 100%.
Right?
Yeah.
But I choose to believe that we have free will because it's a better idea than to say like, I'm not responsible for my actions and my thoughts, yeah. Right? And so when something bad happens to us, we get to choose. Now, what is an empowering idea? What's going to move us forward? What are we going to learn from this experience? And you sound like you got that part worked out, because you're like, you're saying like, I might not be me today had it not been for those tough times. So you've gone past the point of blaming and being angry to the point of, I think it sounds like gratitude. That made you who you are. That's, I think, right? Or
well,
no?
I think what it is that I have stuck around long enough, and like enough time has passed, I've seen the benefit. And I've been able to correlate like skills I have now with what I learned then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're in the like messy middle of it, you're just feeling And you don't feel grateful because you haven't yet recognized the benefit it brings your life. And some things that happen, you don't see the benefit for 5 or 10 years. And I feel like that's how it was with that. I don't think I saw the benefit for about 10 years. But then when I saw it, it was so clear to me. And I was like, this is why all of that is going to benefit me. Like that developed skills that I'm now using here. And it's giving me a huge advantage, like for my age. And I think my gratitude is only amplified over time, probably because of that. It's like, I've just recognized the benefit of it.
Now you said something, and I'd like to revisit this part of it. When you're a young person, you're like, that's not the mom I'm going to be. I'm going to fix myself so I don't repeat these patterns. And it's an incredibly powerful idea because I think what people do is they just wind up repeating the same patterns over and over, generation to generation. So I have this question to ask you because people ask me this. Okay, so in this environment, the Layla that we know today is here. So if you were to have kids, would you want them to be like, hey, go take care of yourself, figure out your life, because I'm not going to take, because that's what made you? Or do you say like, let me take care of you so that you don't have to deal with that? And then how does that shape their thinking? I'm curious, in that thought experiment, what you would do.
I think there's a difference between having kids and parenting. And when I think of parenting, I think it's very similar to, like, there's a lot of similarities between parenting and mentoring. Mentoring, like, younger people. And I think that I would look at it like, I am this person's mentor. And I've thought about this a lot. I do not think that I am, how do I put this? I don't let my emotions dictate my actions enough for me to not do what I know is ultimately right by a person. So even when, I mean, I have so much care for the people on my team, but I will not baby them because I don't see how that benefits them. Even if I want to, even if I'm like, they're crying and I'm like, is that going to benefit them in the long term? And if it's not going to, I'm not going to do it. You know, because I feel like that's selfish because it only makes me feel better, not them. And so I view kids the same way, which is I would do what's best for them in the short and long term. And I think that that's a good frame for parenting is like, how do I act in a way that benefits my children both in the short term and long term? Because a lot of the times it's one or the other. And I think the best is when you can find it that it serves both. But I think, to be honest, I would just never hand my children anything because I just don't see how it would benefit them. I think that that doesn't mean I wouldn't teach them and give them advantage by educating them, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to give it to them, right? Like, I'll teach you how to build this. I'm not going to give it to you.
There's something that Alex wrote, and he said on stage, that I'd like to get your opinion on. He said something like, successful people have these three traits. I hope I'm getting this right. They have something like a God complex. They think they can fix the world and make it better. They have some form of crippling insecurity, and they're willing to delay gratification. But the thing that I want to focus on is this insecurity thing. Like, Alex is a super yoked guy, very successful. I'm like, what do you have to be insecure about? And then I saw on your Instagram, you're like, I have insecurity. You're a super successful, fit, beautiful person. Like, everybody's going to be watching this. Like, what can she possibly be insecure about? And what is it? And where is it coming from? And how are you dealing with it?
I think insecurity comes from if more of my life than not, I was a certain way, then it will take longer to acclimate to the new conditions. So it's like, if for a long time I was overweight, then it's going to take me a long time to feel confident, even if I've lost the weight, because the circumstance can change, but like my behaviors of acting like a fat person do not. So like, even to this day, like, it's so funny. I was talking to one of our good friends, Dr. Cash. He was here in town, and I was saying something, and I was like, I just want to lose like 4 more pounds so I can like look like really fit in this. And he was like, you do, but you wear baggy clothes. And I was like, oh. And he was like, yeah, you don't dress like you're fit, but you're fit. And I was like, it's so funny. I still don't to this day. Like, I still feel weird wearing tight clothes because for so long I was so fat. And so I think it's almost like the circumstance changes, but we don't adapt our behaviors to match. And I think that's why there's just a lot of things that have changed very quickly for me in my life and happened on a fast time horizon. And it's almost like you don't catch up to it. I think that's the first thing. And I think the second thing is I'm always comparing myself and looking at people who are so far ahead of me that I do feel like I have a lot of deficits and skills to work on. Now, let me put it this way. I'm not like beating myself up over it. Like, that's old. Like, old Layla would do that. Maybe I was like 21, 22. But like, I don't beat myself up over that. I'm just like, oh man, I've got a lot to learn. But I think the insecurity, it's probably more now, like in the, like probably most, what's most relevant to me has been since I started making content. Because running a business, I felt very insecure in the beginning. The first few years, I was like, oh my God, I'm 23. People probably think I'm an idiot. Who's this 23-year-old running a business? You know what I mean? Like, seriously. I mean, I'm like, it's not, what business do you have doing this? You don't have any experience. And like, now I got to work for you, you know? And so that's the, like, what I would play out that they're thinking when I hired them. And I was like, I have no actions that support that. I will say, like, it drove me to try so hard and like work my ass off to make sure that I would be really good at what I did. And I don't think that I don't think that my confidence matched my competence until probably 5 years in. And I think with like social media and posting and making videos and all that, like, I mean, even now, you were telling me before, you're like, we're gonna talk about brand. I was like, you know, like, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I just started like 2.5 years ago at the most, like the very beginning was 2.5 years ago. I'm like, I feel like I'm like barely scratching the surface and I feel like I'm awful at all of it. I think that a lot of the times it just takes time for you to recontextualize where you're at. And especially if things happen quickly, like our business grew quickly. Some people might say my brand like grew generally quickly compared to others. And so it's like, you don't catch up necessarily. And I think it's like, you're still human. I think just because I act a certain way, I don't let insecurity drive my behavior, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But I hope that that can be aspirational for people rather than, you know, because I used to always look at people and think, oh my God, I've got to get rid of all my insecurities until I can build a business, until I can make content, like I can do all these things. And then I realized that that never happened. And I did it all while having all those feelings at the same time. And that was relieving to me. It still remains relieving because I'm like, oh, I can make room for all these emotions and I can still get this shit done.
Okay, soft transition here.
Mm-hmm.
I've not achieved anywhere near the level of success that you have, but when people ask me, what's the secret to success? I pause and I'll tell them this answer and they're not expecting it. And I'll say, choose a good partner in your life because they'll lift you or they'll drag you down. They'll make you feel guilty for working or they'll be right there next to you working with you. And so I have to say, and I've done a little research in your story, and I think there's something quite remarkable about your relationship with Alex, because I think I cannot imagine two people who are more suited for each other than the two of you. It's like, you're the female version of him and he's the male version of you. It's like your mirrors. You love to work. Like, it's so weird to say like, hey, what are you doing? Let's work. I'm like, I don't know any woman who would do that. And like, you're the one. Again, it's like the anomaly in the matrix, right? And you guys find each other and you support each other and you lift each other. The question I have for you is this. Alex tells a story and it's pretty well documented. He's like, I'm a loser. I've lost everything. I've made you quit your job. You've come live with me. My question for you is, why were you so loyal to him? What did you see in this person that didn't even give himself credit? And I think in the book that I read, it's like, if you left him there, I think he would have been a broken human for the rest of time because there was not a lot going for him. And every once, I think everybody, if they're so blessed in this life to have one person who could look them freaking in the eye and say, I believe in you before you believe in yourself. I'm just curious what you saw, because, you know, there's a lady or a man out there and you have a partner. Let's learn to identify these things because we can't abandon these people too early.
When I first met Alex, and this is just to give context, I remember the fourth day having met him and he had to go out of town for something and I was at work and he was like, hey, can you pick up all the cash from all of my gyms and deposit it into the bank for me? And I was like, I called him and I was like, what the f*** are you doing? You just met me on Bumble and you asked me to pick up all your money? And he was like, no, you're loyal. And I was like, how do you know? He was like, I can just tell. He's like, you would never do that. And I was like, he's right. You know what I mean? I was like, I mean, he's right. I would never steal a penny from anybody, right? That's just not who I am. And yeah. So I say that to demonstrate, like, I am loyal to a fault. And I had been loyal many times previously in my life, just to people who maybe didn't reciprocate it back to me. And when I met Alex, I think that there's two drivers of that, which is like, one, I think I value loyalty from others. And so I want to exhibit it to others first. I think I genuinely have always strived to be like as good of a person as my father is. And he's the type of person who will stand by someone no matter what. You know what I mean? And so I think I'm really grateful to have him as a role model. But when I met Alex, I think bringing that into the relationship, and then when I met him, I saw a man who was so incredibly strong, the most persistent person I've ever met. His work ethic was, and still is, higher than anybody's I've ever seen. I mean, like, his ability to actually have high output for 14 hours a day, just sitting there, not needing reinforcement, it's crazy to me. But I saw that he was in a place where I think there was two things that I felt, and he might not agree with some of this because it has to do with other people, but I felt like he didn't have the right people surrounding him to let his strengths shine. He had very special gifts, I would say, that he had cultivated in himself, and he didn't have the right people around him to showcase those gifts. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that what a lot of people also don't know is that Alex is incredibly giving. Incredibly. He will give more than the other person always. And that's how he is in all relationships. And I felt like that was kind of the place he was in, which is like he continued to be giving to people and like given too much. And also, I didn't feel like there was anything that he was doing that was wrong. I just felt like he didn't have the right people around him. And I remember thinking to myself and telling him, I was like, I feel like we can make such a great team. Like, I really feel like I see exactly what you're fantastic at. And I think I have a complementary skill set. And I think if we keep cultivating our skills, we could be unstoppable together. And I'd always had the vision of wanting somebody who amplified me as a person rather than suppressed me as a person. And he was the first man I met that actually voiced that he wanted that. I remember even just the way he said it. He was like, if I want somebody to cook and clean for me, I'll hire a maid. And I was like, I get it. But I had had a lot of people that I'd been in relationships with who wanted me to be more quiet, you know, to stand down, to not be so opinionated. And I'm like, I am loud and I'm weird and I work really hard and I'm trying to be successful. You know what I mean? So like, it just felt like they wanted me to be less than myself. And I understand that that's not for everybody. And I have no judgment upon that either. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's just not what works for me. And so in that moment, honestly, the thought that came to mind was like, I just remember the first thought was like, shut the fuck up. Like, I'm not going to leave. Like, there's no way after all of this that we've been through, after this last year, like, we're going to turn the story around. And that was the biggest thing I had in my mind. I remember after that talk we had, we went to the Cheesecake Factory, I think. And we were in the parking lot and it was like dark and the stars were really pretty. And I remember walking, I was like, do you see what this could become? I was like, we can be so great together. And I just know it. I can feel it. Like, it just makes so much sense. And we have so much working against us right now. The moment it's not, I just know that this can be something so great. And I saw glimpses of it at times. But it's funny. It's like, I don't know what that is because I'd never met anyone like him. So it wouldn't be pattern recognition. But I'd also never met anyone that I was so compatible with. And so I think that was also part of it. Like, I'd never met someone who we had so many shared interests, so much shared history, family history, heritage. I mean, like, everything was just weird and we met randomly. And so I was like, the feeling of like, this is not how the story ends. Like, I'm not that person who walks away when it's hard. I can get in there and buckle down. I'm like, I'm in this too, dude. Like, I just made all my friends quit their job to come work for us. Like, we are both risking shit right now. And I also was just like, I'm never going to be that partner that brings my man further down when he's already down. Like, I want to bring him up and remind him how great he is. And I think that that's been something that has been incredibly useful for us as a couple has been, you know, a lot of times in a relationship and one is down, the other gets brought down by that person. And then you're both in the shit. And we've always been like, if one of us is down, the other one's like selling them on why you're so good and bringing them back up. And I think it's been really helpful for us over the years.
That's really beautiful. I feel like if we're listening very carefully right now, there are 10,000 people listening on the internet crying because they don't have somebody like this in their life. Please correct me if I'm wrong here. I think Alex was feeling super down on himself. He's like, I blew it again. All the money's gone. We're in a deep place. And he's like, we're breaking up. Did he say that? Or did I read that?
He said, I'm like, a sinking ship. You should leave me.
You got to leave me. And I don't know a lot of people who'd be like, yeah, no, I'm going to stick the ship. Like when you watch Titanic, like, gentlemen, it's a pleasure playing with you. No, I'm looking for the boat. Because what are we doing? Are we going down with the ship? What? I don't know many people who would say, no, hold on. You're in a low spot. I've seen you at your high. Let's get back up there and let's double down again.
I don't think anybody, like, the best the biggest accomplishments in life and that people hear of and know of, like, it's not like one person does it alone. You know, even if you look at the most successful companies, it's three founders. And I think it's because of that. It's because you need people around you when shit is not working that are going to be like, I've got you. And, you know, I want that from a partner. And so I'm going to show it to them.